Good evening and welcome. You're listening to KKUP Cupertino, 91.5 FM. And it's just after 11 p.m., time for the Vibrational Voyage program. Lovely to be here with you. Thank you so much for tuning in. It's always a pleasure to be here with you and a pleasure to see Amit. I get to follow Orient Express. Orient Express happens every Tuesday from 10 to 11. Then I'm on for an hour until midnight. And then following me is usually Larry Grant or the Kingman, bringing you an interesting array of music. And that assignment always goes by the Wednesdays. So it's if it's the first, third, or fifth Wednesday, then it's the Kingman. And if it's the second or fourth, it's Larry Grant. So let's see, what is it? Tonight's the beginning of March, right? So should be the Kingman up here tonight for us. We're just about to have a new moon, huh? A couple of days. I think it's Friday. Sometime during the day on Friday, the moon and sun will catch up with one another. Interestingly, right now for us, everybody in the listening area of my voice, the moon's right down near the bottom of the sky. So right below us, right below your feet on the other side of the Earth is where the moon is. And just had its conjunction with Venus, which was actually pretty amazing. Venus has just changed signs. But when the moon conjunction happened with Venus, we had, that was just yesterday, I believe, and we had a semi-sextile or a 30-degree angle with Neptune and a sextile with Uranus. Everything was lined up. Uranus and Neptune are about 30 degrees apart and have been for a while. So anytime we have something lining up like that, like Venus at around 29 degrees, and with the moon there, that kind of brings even more energy and attention to it. You get something that's that gets a bounce with that Uranus-Neptune energy. So that one struck me yesterday as a very, maybe a moment for the realization of something unusual that would also have some depth and perhaps lead to even a joyful or a playful discovery. And certainly with the moon with Venus could be something that brings the energy of love forward. So yesterday was a pretty profound day. I was at the funeral for a friend. It's actually somebody that's been a member of my kind of extended family of friends for many years. My wife was especially close with her and knew her really well all the way back to college 25 years ago. So that was definitely a sad occasion. So there are some great difficulties and challenges that are going on for us around here right now. No shortage. And with this position of Uranus is just about to hit the first degree of Aries. It's very, very close. It'll go into Aries, which is a permanent change for Uranus. It will be in there for the next 7 years, starting on March 11th. And what's extraordinary is that this does not happen every time. Uranus makes a trip around the entire sky once in 84 years. Well, it just so happens that this year, just as Uranus is making that transition, and just as Uranus is at the very first half a degree of Aries, at the spring equinox, the sun will be together with Uranus. So that's a rare event, considering the fact that it can only happen once in 84 years, and it's rare that the sun and Uranus would be that close together at the time of Uranus's movement, permanent movement into Aries. It's extraordinary. It's something that would not likely happen for centuries again. So it's been a very strong and interesting pattern we've had here for the last year, for sure. Very, very strong events right on the angles, meaning the equinox times and the solstice times. And this is going to accentuate the angles one last time in a profound way. So it's going to be very close to exact at the time of the equinox, which is on Sunday, May 20th. Interestingly, we're going to have a full moon. Now, we'll be having the new moon I mentioned this week. Should be exact on Friday sometime. Then following that, about 2 weeks later, on Saturday the 19th, so the day before the equinox, we will have the sun and moon opposite to each other while the sun is together with Uranus. And then the sun will be exactly with Uranus on Sunday, shortly after the exact time of the equinox. So all of this deep changing, transitioning, transforming energy, even revolutionary energy that we've been experiencing, this is something that we've kind of talked about and explored to some degree with people that that are frequent guests, either recorded presenters like tonight, I'll have more of Father Charlie, or the live guests like Tiger Windwalker, Vinnie Mikorski, and the other folks that I've had in here over the last few years. They're pointing to this quality of energy, to the type of energy that drives us, compels us from within towards discoveries, towards the realization of our nature, and toward a greater expression, a more truthful expression, a transformative experience within our relationships and ultimately within our communities and our society. And although there's great challenges that stand in the way of such things, those types of changes are actually happening right now. We're witness to it. Some folks might say, oh, well, that's just all a great coincidence and an aberration, and everything will eventually return to normal. Well, we ourselves know that that things have been changing radically for years. And some of the most radical changes that have occurred have not been from the populace, right? It's not been a popular revolt that is kind of smoothly and definitely taken us towards a new potential. But there have been things like a near total economic collapse that have caused a great amount of pain and reorientation for our lives. And some people have been so challenged by this that they've had to completely reinvent the way that they live. Got an email a couple days ago from a friend who's in New Zealand. And she was talking to me. She lives in Christchurch. And the earthquake there completely disrupted infrastructure. When I got this email a few days ago, she had no power, no water. The roads were completely messed up. So messed up, she could not even drive to her home. There were lots of places where the roads were broken and had big holes in them. But the thing that she mentioned was that people were helping each other. Of course, all the electricity was out, so people with food in their freezers were breaking out the food. People who had, they didn't have any electricity, but if they had a gas grill, they'd pull out the grill and let people come and use the grill and cook the food. A lot of innovation and sharing of resources was happening, and she was very pleasantly surprised by how fortuitous the results of that tragic earthquake were. She said in her home area, Christchurch, there was, I think, about 113, I think it was, people who were known dead as of a few days ago when she sent that email. Haven't heard back from her since, but I told her I'd keep her in my thoughts and in my prayers. So I want to invite all of us to do that. Let's keep our thoughts and our prayers going toward the needed help and the transformation necessary for all of us, because we're all in a process of growing, learning, changing. And the environmental conditions right now are catalytic for that kind of change. So some very interesting things that are afoot right now. And I wish us all the very best as we move forward. That spring equinox now is less than 3 weeks away, right? It was on Sunday, this past Sunday, it was 3 weeks away. So we are very close. We have a new moon this week and then two more weeks and boom, there we are. So what I brought you tonight is more of that recording that I gave you last week. There was actually, during the 2003 equinox, a couple of local folks, Lance Carter, in conjunction with a number of other people, and then Sloopy Baru did the recordings for this. They produced a couple of events that happened within just a few weeks. I believe there was two events that happened right around the equinox. And at both of these events, I believe Father Charlie Moore spoke. And we have recordings of both of those. I just transferred this audio last week to CDs so I could play it for you here. I had never listened to the audio that I brought you last week. And today I'll bring you the conclusion of that. But pretty wonderful stuff, full of the kind of perspective and strength that Father Charlie brings to the discussion of human nature and human transformation. He is a very well-educated human being. He's no longer with us. He made his transition to the next life as of, I think it's a little over 3 years ago. He was a strong servant, contributor, lover of life, and teacher in our community right up to the very time of his passing. Was very strong and vibrant and a wonderful spiritual resource in our community. He actually was the district attorney in Santa Cruz County many, many years ago. And after that, and then he went back to school and studied to become a priest, and then was a priest for quite a long time until he retired. Well, he was still a priest after he retired, because he did an awful lot of service in the community and quite a lot of wonderful teaching, as you can see from this. So Father Charlie Moore, just a real gem, and he's a blessing that was recognized far and wide, actually. There were a lot of people all over the place that that knew of him, loved to hear what he had to say. So in honor of Father Charlie and the quickly approaching spring equinox, I brought you more of Father Charlie Moore tonight. So let's see, make sure I have the correct track selected. Looks like I do. So we'll get right into that. Thanks for listening to The Vibrational Voyage tonight.
Someone who knows the joy of giving. A conservative is one who prefers to keep what he has. At times we're conservative, and at times we're liberal. But beware of being mostly conservative, because the joy of life will leave you. Now, mine, the conservative says, mine, private property. You know what private property means? They taught me this at Stanford when I went to law school. Private means the right to deprive others of the use. That's a legal definition. Private property is that property which you are privileged to deprive others of the use of. Basically, there was no such an idea in America. There wasn't any private property. Now, they did have medicine bags with their own personal sacred elements, which they wore around their neck. But everything else belonged to everybody. and whoever needed it used it. Because they were all one, you see, unanimity. The white men didn't understand that at all. And they called them Indian givers. Because the white men would come, and there were things around they weren't using, and they'd give it to the white man to use because they weren't using it. And then they'd come around when they did need it and take it back. And the white man was all upset because they thought they were stealing it. And you became an Indian giver. You took back the private property which you had been given. But they hadn't given it to him. You didn't need to give anything to anybody. It belonged to everybody anyway. The stars belong to everyone. The sea belongs to everyone. The trees belong to everyone. And so does everything belong to everyone. And in a world where people trust each other, why not? See? Private property? Sounds like communism to me. Yes, it does. Only I give it another name because communism has been so denigrated by the conservatives, you can't even use the word anymore. I call it communityism. All right? The founding fathers, Franklin and Jefferson, took the Iroquois nation as the example of what they wanted this country to be. They knew about the fact that we, the white folks, needed to imitate what they called the Indians rather than the other way around. As a matter of fact, it now turns out that the influence of America, as we call it, Turtle Island, on Europe was far greater than anything that went the other way around. The discovery of America changed Europe completely. And the only reason, whatever the Europeans did here, they just killed them all. But still, the influence of America was the reason for the birth of democracy in Europe. What? Yeah. The Pope hates democracy, you know, with an absolute passion. There's only been one Pope in the history of the Catholic Church who liked democracy, and that was John the 23rd. All the other popes have vigorously fought against every democratic movement in Europe. Why? Because democracy is contrary to the structure of the Roman Empire, which is based upon equality and greed. Christianity was founded to defend the Emperor of Rome. It's all a subtle job of defending greed as the way to be. You talk about a problem here. These things are so deep and so real. The Hawaiians know about the Age of Darkness too. When I was on the island of Kauai, I went to Lihue, Kauai, and I went to the library there, and there I found a great number of works by an Irishman called Padraic Cullum. And he had translated from the Hawaiian the ancient hymns of the people. And the most marvelous of them all was the creation hymn. And the creation hymn didn't have to do with the stuff that we would think it would. It had to do with how the Hawaiian people found the islands and why they went looking. And they say that the story begins in North Africa, at the desert side of the Atlas Mountains, 5,000 years ago, when the Sahara still had rivers and was covered with savanna and all the creatures of Africa. You know, it was. that short a time ago. And the kahunas, by the way, kahuna means keeper of the forbidden secret. Why forbidden? Well, that'll take a time, another time. But anyway, huna means secret, kapu means forbidden. Tabu, kapu, forbidden. Keeper of the forbidden secret. But you see, the kahunas knew about the grandmother council and the grandfather council. They knew about unanimity and how to achieve it. Their council made all the decisions for the nation, as it should. The linking together of right brains is the ladder to heaven. The loss of one's individuality in the ecstasy of union is the nature of true decision-making power. Can we do this? Yes. Now, so the kahunas would come together regularly, of course, in order to experience various things, particularly as a legislature or a judicial body. The administration was another matter. Now, coming together on one occasion, they heard a voice. They frequently heard the voice. The unanimous voice that spoke to them all at once as if they were one being. And it said, an age of darkness is coming upon the earth. You must go and find a place to keep the Huna safe against that age of darkness, which will ravage the world for 5,000 years. And so, obediently, they ekankared the world. In their unanimous state, they flew around the world looking for the place. Weird, huh? Can we do that? Yeah. Now, Ekankar, we call it. Well, anyway, they all went around the world and found the Hawaiian Islands way out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. And they called, and they saw them in the sunrise, silhouetted against the sun. And they all impacted in their common mind, individually, exactly what that looked like. The exact shape of the islands against the sun. And then they came back, having been gone for many months, but only an hour or two, and told the people to pack up. Time to go. And they started migrating across the world. They migrated across the Sahara, stayed a long time in Egypt, migrated up through Palestine, across Iraq and Persia, on through India, out into the Indonesian archipelago, and finally, in the year, I think it was the year about 1000 AD, reached far Kahiki, that we call Tahiti. But they had given a name to this vision they had. They called it Hava Iki Iki, land under the inner eye. Hawaiian eye? That's what it is. It's this one. The land under the inner eye is the name they gave to Hawaii. After they'd stayed on Tahiti for about 300 years, the place started to get overpopulated. Pacific Islands have that problem frequently. And it requires deadly measures of one kind or another. And the manner in which it was decided was that when it was time to thin out the population, Lots were taken to see who was surplus and who wasn't. And the surplus group were given a choice. They could either get thrown in the volcano or migrate. Well, curiously it seems most people got thrown in the volcano and didn't want to migrate. But when they migrated, they got on their boats and they loaded it up with all the stuff and the pigs and the water and the kids and the whole business and followed the drinking gourd. Drinking gourd's the Big Dipper and the North Star, because the directions were, it was north of here. And for months, they crossed the wide sea. And one morning, they woke up at sunrise, and there it was, Hava Iki Iki, exactly as the kahunas had seen it nearly 5,000 years before. And they shouted with great praise, Hava Iki Iki, land under the inner eye, where we shall keep the secret safe against the age of darkness. Well, that was about 1350. 400 years later, Captain Cook arrived and started to tear them up just the way Columbus tore the rest of us up. Now, this Polynesian people, you see, were from Africa. And their tradition is exactly the same as America. Their ideas are the same. Now, I want to show you what the prayer is. What is a prayer anyway? See, you got to define all these terms. Prayer comes from the word pry, as to pry open. Huh? You have to pry yourself open in order to let the inspiration come in and the blessing go out. There has to be an openness to the flow through you of the power. And prayer is opening so the power can work. Now remember, this power is what lies behind grace and gravity. It's what lies behind the flow of the universe. And you can direct it. Now, so this prayer, or this prayer, is important stuff. But the use of the power. Is basically about praying with the earth. What? It's about praying with the earth more than for the earth. The thing is, remember this vortex business that we walk around in? And that the earth contains in this donut. When there are flows of water underground, like this, they have a cylindrical helix of force around them. And if two of them cross like that, something very strange happens. Standing wave. But a wave moves. How can it be standing? Good question, but it can. Now, if you want to get an image for this, went to the Carmel River one time at Easter, and the water had come down and was piling up against the sand and was flooding all the houses up in the valley. I saw this, and with all my priestly stuff on and everything, I went out, took my hand, and dug a little channel for the water to run into the sea. And it went. And within 15 minutes, it was almost a quarter of a mile wide. But it formed a standing wave. Like that. And though the water was moving fast, the wave stood still. That's a standing wave. Now, the standing wave principle works like grace and gravity. It's everywhere. And we are, in a sense, just a standing wave. A standing wave is the way energy becomes matter, in which it keeps flowing, but it stands still at the same time. Now, this standing wave of energy is created by two flows underground, and it stands above the ground just like a teepee, spinning vortex, invisible. It's the very breath of Mother Earth. It's called a deva. The word divine comes from the word deva. A deva is an earth spirit. An earth spirit is one of these things. And if you walk into it with your little spinning aura, it will lift your spirit right up. Like that. That's what a holy place is. That's where you put a medicine wheel. That's where you put a megalith. That's where you put a church. All the churches of Europe, especially the cathedrals, are built on ancient so-called pagan holy places, which were doused by the Druids. So, the prayer. Remember what happens. If the earth prays outward, the universe prays inward. And the vortex in the northern hemisphere will come down counterclockwise and meet one coming out of the earth clockwise in the northern hemisphere. They're correlative opposites. And they mix. And when you get one coming out of all the people, it builds a big one, and it draws down a big one. And the earth is literally praying through your heart to the stars. And the material dimension is praying through your body to the origin of being. And here's the prayer. And I learned it from the Mayans in Central America. At the very time that the shamanism returned to Guatemala. Why did it return? Because the white men had made it a capital crime to practice shamanism. It was against Jesus, you see. And they killed you if you practiced it. In the United States, that law existed until 1970. Do you ever wonder why you didn't see many shamans before that? They stopped enforcing it, but it was still on the books. And one time, it is said a general caught a shaman practicing and took him up, lined him up against the wall to shoot him. And being very formal, said, "Do you have anything to say before we shoot you?" The shaman said, "Yes, General, I do. You can kill us all, but we will be back as your grandchildren." And you know what? We're his grandchildren. It's coming back. Now, because of this visitation of the ancestors, you see, something. Now, so the prayer. May the heart of earth, remember everything's alive, everything is energy, everything is life force, and everything is consciousness. Everything. This isn't a wooshy idea, see? This is physics. Physicists haven't quite gotten there, but quantum physics is a big step. It's all energy, it's all life force, it's all consciousness, it's all the same stuff. May the heart of earth flow to the heart of the heavens through my heart. And through all our hearts together. And may our hearts be the heart of every sentient being in all the universe. And may the heart of the heavens flow to the heart of earth through my heart and through all our hearts together. And may our hearts be the heart of all humankind. Is that a good Earth Day prayer?
It works just fine.
That works pretty good. Yeah. Oh, is that the shaman's prayer in Guatemala of the Mayans? Yes. And some form of it is in every other nation on this continent. Awfully intelligent, don't you think? This is the kind of memory that we need to awaken in ourselves. And these are the things we need to do. Knowledge without practice is a game. Knowledge with practice is holiness itself. What does holy mean? Here we go again. Holy should be spelled with a W. Wholeness is holiness. That's what the word means. Holy. Wholeness. Where you are one with yourself and everything in you is unanimous. You can almost look at it this way. Every one of the cells of your body has the potential to rebuild you exactly. We found that out, you know. You are literally, what shall I make a number, 13 trillion strong? There are 13 trillion of you in you. And all of them are singing together the song that is you. And out of this a pluribus comes the unum. The a pluribus, the cells of your body, and the unum is you. Ex una plures. Out of one many, out of many one. Now, so, 13 trillion of me? Isn't that a little bit much? Yeah, it is, it's much, but it's also true. Consider the functions of stem cells. Oh my. I think I better go down that trail a little way. Stem cells. Found in the menstrua. Menstrua. Holiest substance on the planet. Women are powerful because of the, and the evidence is a direct track between the menstrua and right brain function. Daughter of the moon, remember? Why daughter of the moon? Because of the moons. Isn't that what we say? The moons. And how great a reverence there is for the moons of women in this native world of ours here. A reverence which does not exist in the white man. Rather, condemnation. Our religion has curiously made us demonic. Holiness is to know about daughter of the moon, Nikomis. And the goddess has three faces, doesn't she? Three stages. Maiden, matron, and crone. And the dividing lines are all about the menstrua. Maiden to puberty. Matron to the end of menstruation. Crone afterwards. The holiest women are the crones. And having a croning ceremony is very important to the safety of this world. A ceremony in which women are introduced to the power that has matured in them through a lifetime and asked to join together to make decisions for the nation. Get rid of all of these men arguing and majority rules and tyranny of the majority and all that stuff. Forget that. The only way true government can make a decision is unanimously. And unanimity is the function of right brain joining, at which postmenstrual women are particularly adept. The other thing about postmenstrual women is they become androhermaphrodites, in which they balance the male and female functions in themselves almost automatically. We men are scared to death to do that. But you ladies are not so scared. And when you get past the menstruation time, it gets to be normative. And it is in that androhermaphrodinous state of right brain activity that the truth of a good government forever rests. Governments are there to make decisions that affect the world. I believe that only a grandmother council should be trusted with that. Only a grandmother council. Now, we men can do this too, but the ladies have to teach us. And we only go one at a time to learn. Because if there are two of us, trouble breaks out. So, we therefore need to go alone and learn to be androhermaphrodites and learn to exercise our right brain power. And then we men can get together and do that too, and that's the grandfather council. And the grandfather council carries out the decisions that the grandmother council makes. Doesn't it? I found an American nation that still has its grandmother council. It came to me drifting on the wind. I got a letter from Wisconsin from a lady that I knew who called me on the phone and said, "Oh, Father Charlie, I want to tell you that I have found a Catholic church here in Milwaukee in which the priest has turned the entire thing over to the local native people to do their ceremonies. He's even grown a pigtail." I said, "Really?" She said, "Yes, you should come back here and see this." "I'll be back," I said. 2 weeks later, I got a postcard from her. "Father Charlie, you wouldn't believe it, but I found the Mohawk Nation for you." I said, "Really? Where are they?" She said, "They're here in Wisconsin." "Well, I thought they were in New York." "Yeah, but they moved them from the Hudson River to Wisconsin, and they still have their grandmother council." Wow! Really? So I'll be there on the 4th of July. I want to do some nation building on the 4th of July and establish connections with all the people who are on the verge of doing this. And there's a lot of us. Maybe you're one. And this inclination to do this and to understand this and to remember this is coming right out of the earth itself and moving up through the spiral of your being and pressing you from within. Do it. No, not me. I am not worthy. If you weren't worthy, you couldn't hear it. It's time to get the nation back. Of course, we never had it. America was founded on the principle of the Declaration of Independence, we think, which is freedom, equality, and brother-sisterhood. We hold these truths to be self-evident. Now, I want you to remember that phrase, self-evident. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all human beings are created equal, endowed by their Creator with the inalienable right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That is an American dream. But it's American native dream. Jefferson and Franklin got it from the Iroquois Nation. And Franklin got it because Quakers were already very close, see, with their unanimity. They had to fight like bearcats to get that in that document, you know. It was a war, every inch of the way. Nah! Sounds like American Indian junk to me. But they got it in there. It was one of the greatest triumphs the world has ever known. But Alexander Hamilton shot it all down immediately. Alexander Hamilton was the agent of the European banks. And for him, greed is a virtue, murder is not a crime, and the end justifies the mean is the foundation of Wall Street and of the banks and of the American economy and everything we've done since. We lost it right at the beginning. America never followed its dream. And that's why the world's mad at us. That's exactly why the world's mad at us. And the person who's proved that is John Steinbeck, who went to Stanford, you know? John Steinbeck is the most widely read American author all over the world because he has proclaimed the American dream and said America is about freedom, equality, and brother-sisterhood. That's what he's done. And he casts it in terms of King Arthur and the Holy Grail. Yes? And the world has read John Steinbeck and said, that's what America's about. All you Americans, come. Help us to have your dream. This is what we all want. Of course. And we get there, and it's greed is a virtue, murder is not a crime, and the end justifies the mean, and no freedom, no equality, and no brother-sisterhood. And they say, "Argh! I'm going to kill you, you dirty dog! You hypocrite!" What did we do wrong? We abandoned our dream. That's what we did wrong. Now we have to turn to the spirit of this land, to the ancestors of this land, to the native people who remember. We have to get our dream back. And thus, we can save the world by saving ourselves. Freedom, equality, and brother-sisterhood. Liberté, égalité, fraternité. Bah, humbug, nonsense! It could never be like that. Latin maxim, de esse ad posse semper valet consecutio. From the being of a thing to the possibility of the thing, the consequence inevitably follows. But not the other way around. From possibility to existence is perilous. But from being to possibility always follows. If it's been done once, it's obvious that it can be done. And we are not proposing something new. We're proposing something very old. We are proposing to reestablish paradise. Now, pragmatically, how can we do that? Let's get down to nuts and bolts here. Well, we'll do that by taking over the government. Thomas Jefferson said, there must be a new revolution every 20 years in America, or otherwise the vested interests will take it over and ruin it. He was right, wasn't he? It's been 200 years and no revolution. No wonder we're in such a lot of trouble. Now, how do you take over the government? First of all, you don't do it by opposing anybody. You don't do it by making war. You don't do it by criticizing people. You don't do it by trying to change people's minds. Well, then how do you do it? You provide a government where there isn't any. Now watch this. There's a government at the federal level. There's a government at the state level. There's a government at the county level. And there's a government at the city level. But there's no government in the neighborhood.
Oh, yes, there is.
No, there's not. Not one that is recognized as part of the structure. There have been efforts of organizations and this and that. But there's no, if you want to start a neighborhood government, the fact that there's one there is not going to prevent you from doing it. They're not going to say, you can't do this because we've done it. Can't do that legally. Now, so let us provide a government in the neighborhood. And how do we do that? By making a grandmother council. And the grandmother council does what? It makes decisions. It makes decisions for the grandmothers on the council to begin with. And then the members of their family begin to ask them to make decisions for them too. And so they do. And then the neighbors find out, and they come and ask you to make decisions for them. Not all the neighbors, but enough. And the numbers keep growing. And grandmother councils start popping up all over the place. And you're building nations, is what you're doing. And nobody can object. It's not illegal. And don't try to get anybody to come. No missionaries. You don't go out and say, come and do this with us. No. You just wait till they find out. It's gravity and grace, guys. It works. So, the idea is, after you get a grandmother council, maybe you'll get a grandfather council to help the people carry out the decisions that were made. And little by little, America will reappear in our midst. It's going to happen. It's happening now. And this situation we're in right now, with the war and all that stuff, is helping a lot. Because people are asking, what did we do wrong? What we did wrong was betray the American dream. And so, let us begin. Above all things, listen to the American dream on the dollar bill for what it really means. Four, the divinity breathes with approval upon the things we have begun. A renewal of the ancient.
A renewal of the ancient order of affairs. Freedom, equality, and brother sisterhood. That's Father Charles Moore. Gotta love him. Part of our lives, part of our community, though no longer here with us in the flesh, certainly with us in spirit, and tonight, and last week, the voice with us here on The Vibrational Voyage. I want to say thank you so much for being here tonight. Hope you enjoyed the show. Got to tell you that some things coming up. That Equinox full moon I told you about, that's 2 weeks from this Saturday. And during that weekend, we're going to be having a fundraising marathon. The psychedelic music marathon is going to be happening. It's the 7th annual psychedelic marathon, going from Friday, March 18th at 3 until Sunday at midnight. So that's an Equinox weekend event. The music should be fun and pretty nicely synergistic with the Equinox. I hope you get a chance to enjoy it. But remember, we're completely listener-supported. These events do help us raise money. And you can make a donation at the website anytime or by calling KKUP. You can make a donation. The website is kkup.org. And the phone number's here, 408-260-2999 and 831-255-2999. I'm about out of time. I got to make room here for the King Man. So stay tuned. He'll have some great music for you coming up. And I'll see you next week. God bless you. See you on the next Vibrational Voyage. You're listening to KKUP Cupertino.